Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. Good to have you all with us on our way to our conversation. I do want to remind you about what is happening this weekend and don't want you to miss it. This February the 17th at 2 p.m., join me at the Enoch Pratt Central Library at 2 p.m., the Central Branch downtown. I'll be interviewing Shirley Sherrod. Remember Shirley Sherrod? She was the USDA Georgia State Director for Rural Development, who was fired July 2010 when right-wing bloggers published clips from her speech making it look as if she was making racist attacks against white farmers, far from the truth, and no one stood up for her but herself. And she wrote this incredible book, The Courage to Hope, and we'll be talking about that, her life, her work, and more. So come down to Enoch Pratt this Sunday, 2 p.m., and join us. We'll be taping it for air later here on WEAA as well. Have a chance to ask your questions. We're going to jump right into our conversation. This is a very special Valentine's, I think, and it's because of 1 Billion Rising, a movement that started across the globe of women standing up. It's a global strike, an invitation to dance, as is written on the site, a call to women, men and women to refuse to participate in the status quo until rape and rape culture ends. And we have very powerful folks on the show today to talk about all this. Joining us by phone for a few minutes here is Rebecca Nagel. She, along with Hannah Brancato, is a member of the Force Upsetting Rape Culture. You can find more about that at upsettingrapeculture.com. They floated a giant palm in the reflecting pool at the National Mall today that said, "I can't forget what happened and no one else remembers." And they're pushing to create a permanent national memorial for survivors of sexual assault. And you can check out mourningandrage.com. And Rebecca, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jackie Jones is with us by phone, and she's a sex educator, owner of Sugar, a lesbian-owned, women and trans-operated sex toy store, activist with sexual assault, and more. And Jackie, welcome back to the show. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Andrea Platt is with us. She's associate editor at Racialicious, an award-winning blog about race and popular culture, where she blogs about race and sex and pop culture. And Andrea, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
And this time I did get your last name right.
Yes, you did.
Mathina James Breifel is with us. She's in studio. She's director of community education with Turnaround Inc. and visionary director for Heal a Woman, Heal a Nation. And Mathina, good to have you in the studio. Good to see you again, too.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good to have you all here. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Rebecca, let's start with you. I know you're on your way back from D.C. and talk about what and your group was also the group that gave Victoria's Secret a headache as well, right?
Yeah. So, what a lot of people know Force for was a recent action we did in December, where we culture jammed for Victoria's Secret with a fake website and a fun photo shoot, where we pretended to be Victoria's Secret promoting consent themed panties, and the prank went viral and got a lot of attention on the internet and on social media, and started this really awesome national conversation of people posting on Facebook, tweeting about consent and why, you know, an image of a sexy woman shouldn't be an image of a sexy woman with a thing that says sure thing on her body and a thong, but should actually be something that is sexy and empowered. And so we made underwear that said ask first.
So tell us, I love it. And the thing about that real quickly, just not to talk about it too much longer, but people loved it. They actually thought it was really Victoria's Secret and wanted to order the stuff themselves.
Yeah, and I think that it shows that, like, our culture is ready for that kind of message. Like, it's really, it doesn't seem that far off of what could happen. And so, yeah, we got a huge positive response.
And talk about the action you all did today.
So today we floated in the reflecting pool on the National Mall, a giant poem made out of giant red styrofoam letters that spelled, "I can't forget what happened, but no one else remembers." And the poem is written by a survivor and highlights the isolating experience of surviving sexual trauma. And we did this action to create a temporary memorial to survivors of rape and abuse as a call to create a permanent national memorial. So this is today, you know, coinciding with 1 Billion Rising, is kind of the kickoff of this whole movement. And what we're working towards is to have a memorial on the Mall so our country can hold public space where people can heal and help with the situation that we have now, where a lot of people who've experienced sexual trauma live in silence and live in shame.
Mathan, I know you were excited to hear that she was coming on the show and about the action they were taking.
Yes. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I was just saying with Mark, I was like, we owe her a phone call, so we have a date that we need to keep. But I was so excited to hear what happened today, because I know the last conversation we were talking about, you know, what might or might not happen, floating that into the mall, into the pool. So happy that it went well.
So let's talk about this day. I mean, I think that when I first saw this, this is very exciting and important that this kind of happens on a day like Valentine's Day and what it means. And Andrea Platt, I know you've been writing a lot about issues like this. And let me just start with you, if I might, about the importance and power and what this 1 Billion Rising means.
Well, for 1 Billion Rising, it was an event started by Eve Ensler, who is the playwright behind the Vagina Monologues.
Right.
And the point of the day is for women and people who support women to get together and to create, through this simultaneous movement of dancing, to say that, to use their bodies to interrupt this idea of our bodies are to be assaulted all the time in silence and individually by whoever wishes to invade our space. Be it physically, be it sexually, be it financially. When we are caught without money, we have to depend on living in very dangerous situations and things like that. So for this one night, this one event, 1 billion people or close to it all over the world are in support of women who have experienced, may experience sexual assault, sexual violence. And that's really what the point of it is about. Of course, I've been reading people who are for it, and I've been reading critiques about the event tonight. I personally am on the fence about it a little bit, but I do think that it is a place for people to start.
Why are you on the fence?
Where they can. I'm sorry?
Why are you on the fence?
I'm on the fence because I understand where some people feel like one night of dancing is not going to solve the systematic structures of what allows sexual violence to occur in the first place. We're not talking about, for example, having a job where you pay two-thirds an hour if you are a restaurant worker, and it doesn't allow you to get out of a situation where you're facing intimate partner violence. So you have to stay there, and because you don't have a job that gets you out. And I'm just using that as one example. However, as I said, it is a place for people to start. It's that one night a person is allowed to move their body in order to celebrate the fact that their body is still their own in some way, shape, or form. If they're a person who survived a sexual violence, maybe it'll also move that person to do other things. Maybe go out and be an escort at an abortion clinic. Or as another example, or to maybe find the wherewithal to perhaps get out of the situation, maybe get two or three different jobs, live with friends, things like that. So it's a place, I think it's a place, again, where people can start. It's a place where people can start their activism. I don't think it's the be-all, end-all of activism. It's one of many forms of activism that people can participate in. And hey, I'm all for dancing. So I think it's a great, I think it's a, at that level, I think it's a great space for people to be in.
Jack, you want to come in on this?
Well, I have very similar feelings. Like, it's going out and having a flash mob, awesome. That's great. And it raises awareness and it gets people talking. Like, for example, that's part of why we're all talking right now. And it's raising a lot of awareness on social media and whatnot. But I think that also needs to be channeled into next steps.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, well, next steps, like making sure that we're talking about radical consent and enthusiastic consent, talking about how women's bodies are colonized in our culture and how male sexuality is colonized, that in some way, shape, or form, somebody thinks it's acceptable to use sex as a weapon, that it's acceptable even to harass a woman walking down the street. And anybody who walks down the street with the vagina has experienced that. And the ways that we tend to institutionalize gender as only two boxes, and the way that people who are gender nonconforming or are transgender, their bodies are colonized and sexualized in ways without their consent. So, I mean, there's so much that needs to be addressed. And I think it's great to, like, have a way in, but it needs to not stop today.
And Mathana, since you're here in studio, let me jump into here with you as well. I mean, I'm one of the things I know you were excited to hear about what was going on in D.C., and you're going actually to the after this, to the flash mob that's happening downtown Baltimore after this is over. But talk about the power and limitations of what is happening today.
I think one of the things that most of us consider, talk about, and share, especially in the realm of educating around sexual violence and gender-based violence, is that everyone can do something. And if we can get people to understand that, then the more actions that they will take will become much more vibrant, bigger, better, and create an impact that can go beyond that one step or that one day. I agree with my colleagues talking about the fact that today is not the end of this. For many people, it's the beginning. And we want to celebrate that and we want to honor that. But we want to make sure they're clear on what's next for me. One of the things I'll be doing this evening is going to talk with a group of young people at the library on understanding what healthy relationship looks like and talking about what today meant for so many people around the world.
But No, finish. I'm sorry.
Just saying also, one of the things that we're talking about earlier, Mark, you and I talked about the fact that we talk about what goes on overseas, but a lot of this happens in our very own backyard. And so looking at this, looking at that, what does that mean then? When the eyes that I just looked into reflect to me a story so horrific that it would be easier to accept if it was coming from somewhere else rather than from my neighbor, from my sister, from my friend.
Well, I think it's the whole concept of sweeping around your own back door before you try to sweep around mine, as the old gospel song says. And I think far too often we in the United States, we like to view ourselves as advanced. And so we take that to mean to be superior to. So we will very easily and quickly criticize what happens in New Delhi, India, for example, before we turn around and we say anything about what happened in Stephenville, Ohio, going along with what my colleague just said.
Right.
But we need to take both of those situations, and we need, and maybe this one day when people are doing the flash mob, there may be also conversations before, during, and after where they can tell, well, okay, so we had a flash mob. Very cool. But let's talk about some of the things that we've been noticing in the news, like what happened across the globe. And what does that mean? What else do we need to say to people who feel the need to use sexual violence as a way to control each other, this society? And how do we stop that? Why do we continue to need to use this particular form to enforce power and control over folks when it's absolutely unnecessary?
So the question I have for you all is, I mean, so we have this thing there, which I think is important, 1 billion women rising, 1 billion rising period, not just women, rising to say no. But when you look at things like, as these stats have been looking at, that rape is the fastest growing violent crime in the United States, the fastest growing violent crime. And we all know the 1 in 3 stat of women who have been sexually assaulted in their lifetime, which I think, hearing stories from women, that's a low number. Because many people don't want to talk about it, but we'll talk about it with their friends quietly at some point in their life, but don't come out about it because it's too painful to come out about it.
And so it's not only just too painful, but we're talking about a legal system that, especially in the United States, tends to not believe the victim.
Right.
So if a victim decides to prosecute decides to go ahead and go through with charges, we're talking about the person having to go stand before a court and relive that experience and relive someone basically saying to them, you're not a believable, you're not a quote-unquote believable victim because you were, for example, partying too hard. You were passed out. You were this. You were that.
But
And so what I've been reading about some of the coverage in India is that even with the sexual violence that's going on, the victims are more than likely believed because there's so much of it going on, versus here in the United States, we're still saying, well, we don't quite believe you. We're not quite sure about that. And even that happened in history. I'm reading this book by Danielle McGuire called At the Dark End of the Street, of how sexual violence against black women was actually the motivating force behind the civil rights movement. Huh. And in this book, it's saying that very much that's how they've cast black women in history, was you're not supposed to be believed, you aren't to be believed because you're Jezebels. The men, when they described the sexual violence that they inflicted, they called it sexual intercourse, and basically tried to set the women up as being willing to be raped, is what it was. And that was how so many white men were able to get away with the crimes that they did for so long.
So I and Jack and Mathina, and I think are you still with us, Rebecca?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were still there. I thought you were in the car and gone, but you're here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
So the question I want to raise here is then what society has to do. In other words, because we're talking about a society that culture, almost every culture on the planet.
Yeah, I think that what we're talking about with the way that survivors are silenced, I think that, you know, it's one of those things that's so odd where we all agree that rape is wrong, but then the stigma is carried by the survivor rather than the perpetrator more often. And I think that that's one thing that we really need to fix, is create a space for survivors that is safe and is public and is a space where people can heal. And if you think a lot about trauma, and you can think of other traumas in history, there one way that a culture moves forward from a trauma is recognizing it. It's that idea of that, like, a history that's remembered is a history that won't be repeated. And what we feel like with rape, with force, is that an epidemic that's recognized, not just by rattling off statistics, but by really grounding it in people's lived experiences, will make it less likely to continue. And I feel like our culture hasn't done that in a real way. Like, we see these sensational cases that get a lot of media attention, but I think we haven't swallowed the hard pill of how common those things are. So how, you know, the case of the teenager that was raped in Ohio, that's not, you know, it's not an isolated incident. It's happening all the time.
And so, and Jack, let me bring you back in the conversation as well, and go back to Mathina. Part of the issue we're facing here, when you look at, let's say, almost 70% of all rape victims are women. Know their assailant. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a culture, a world culture, not just an American culture, a world culture that accepts the kind of control. And not just sexuality that we all are driven by, but a sexualization of women that we own.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? I mean, there's something fundamental has to change.
No, there is. There's something fundamental that has to change. And I think that it goes to multiple things. And one of the things it goes to is how we think about women and how we think about men and what we think is acceptable. And part of that has to mean that we view women as beings that have a right to our own bodies, that we are beings that have a right to express our sexuality as we choose, whether that means, and that we should be safe to walk naked down the street, and that we should be safe to walk down the street wearing a burqa, and everything in between, and that how we present ourselves does not mean that in any way, shape, or form we are welcoming or not welcoming any form of sexual activity. Ask first needs to be the mantra, and it needs to be the understanding. And that needs to start really early. And part of what needs to happen is we need to move the discussion of rape away from what do women need to do to protect themselves, what do we need to do to change our culture so that everyone is safe. Because it's not just I need to protect myself, and if I was protecting myself better, somebody is a rapist, right? Like, mm-hmm. somebody made that choice.
Right.
So we need to start with them.
Right.
Exactly.
One of the things I think we do is we focus a lot. This is one of the only crimes where we focus more on the victim than we do on the criminal. It's one of the only instances where you're seeing so much of that happen. And when we talk about starting early or starting young, I think of times where I'm talking to young children, you know, kindergarten, early elementary school children. I'm talking about they're the boss of their body. And when I look at the little girl pointing at herself saying, yes, I'm the boss of my body.
Right.
I'm looking at the day where there's no but to that. There's no exception to that, that at the end of the day, she'll continue
but
to be
what,
a boss.
But one of the things, what does the young boy have to say? What has to change? Because it's not, you know, I mean, we constantly blame women, mm-hmm. the way women dress, the mm-hmm. way they walk, the swivel of their hips, whatever the hell we want to say it is.
Right.
But it's not usually women who rape women.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I think we need to complicate that just a little bit. I think we need to talk about not just women and men. I think we need to talk about weakness and power.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Because as we know, there are men who rape men. There are women who do rape other women. I think it's about the idea of bodily autonomy and integrity. My body is mine, regardless of who I am, what skin tone it is clothed in, no matter what gender it will present into this world. It is mine, and my body is not an invitation for you, rapist, to come at me however you want because you want. My body is none of your business. Don't worry about it. Don't catcall me. Don't holler at me. Don't do this to me. If I say no to you, no, that's it. That needs to be the end of the discussion. There's no negotiation around it. I think that's what we need to say to the perpetrator. It means we need to say to the perpetrator, whoever, I don't care what you're feeling that day, their body is not yours to express that upon. That's what we need to say to our young people at a very young age. Start off with that. Your body is yours. Their body is theirs.
Go ahead.
And that should be really it.
When I'm looking at this in this conversation around young people, we have got to use every single medium we have in order to push this conversation. I had a long conversation with a group of young men this week, and the entire conversation was centered around looking at how we objectify women's bodies, but bringing it to their conversation, their level. So we use hip-hop. We use popular culture and talked about for them, what does this say to you? And bringing that conversation forward, and we got a chance to really take a look at, oh, okay, and then people get caught up in, okay, they won't get it. No, that's not true. We got to move away from, you know, youth as our future. They are, but they're also our present. And if we're not engaging every single human in this conversation of ending this violence, then it will never end unless everyone is absolutely involved in this process.
Rebecca, was that you trying to jump in?
I just wanted to say, I think the place that cultural shift really hinges on is consent. Because I think if you think about the way our culture treats dating and sex, it's this really creepily transactional thing where you're trying to get some from somebody, and the more you can get, the more successful you are at being a sexual being or something like that. And it's treated almost as a conquest instead of as coming together in a way where you're respecting and you're making sure that the person that you're having sex with or the people that you're having sex with everyone's having the sex that they want to be having. And so I think that there's gender and there's power, but then there's just the whole way that we treat other people and that we don't pause for consent and we don't teach that and we don't show that and our culture doesn't reflect that. And so I think, like what Jack was saying earlier, one thing that we can do, especially when working with young people, is teaching enthusiastic consent and having it be part of sex education and having it be mainstream. Like one thing we said with Pink Loves Consent is that we compared it to condom use. Like condom use used to not be something that people did a lot and would make a lot of arguments about how it was awkward
But now it's being taught condoms are available. And while there's still work to be done around condom use, we're much better than where we were 20 years ago. And I think consent could do the same thing. If consent was part of regular sex education, if it was part of mainstream culture, it could really change the way that people are interacting with each other sexually and really take away a lot of the unwanted sexual experiences that young people are having because they don't know how to talk. They don't know how to ask their partner, and they don't know how to speak up for what they want for their body.
Right, and it's not just young people that need to have this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
60-year-olds need to be having this conversation.
Right.
80-year-olds, I mean, we thank goodness most of us don't stop having sex until the day we die. And that's one of the things that I talk about. I often go on college campuses and teach a class called Hot, Safer Sex. And when I'm there talking about that, we're not just talking about sexually transmitted infections. We're talking about radical consent and enthusiastic consent. And anytime we're talking to people in the store, that's like part of the conversation. Because not only is consent important to safety and reducing rape and sexual assault, it's also important to good sex.
Yes, it's sexy.
So let me just tell me, I have to interrupt for just a second because we have to take a short break. And we have another segment coming up. But I was wondering if the four of you could, I know you might have to run, right?
Yeah, I do.
If some of you could just hold for a minute, I just want to finish this conversation up. The next 5 or 6
sure.
minutes, we'll come back and just hold on. On the way to the break, I want to remind everybody, Creative City Public Charter School is a new progressive elementary school located in the Park Heights community here in Baltimore, Maryland, where we're broadcasting from, that uses hands-on learning and arts integration, now accepting applications for kindergarten through second grade. Lottery application deadline is March the 1st. More information available at www.creativecityschool.org. We'll be right back, and I'm sorry you have to run, Mathina, but it's good to have you with us in the studio. Mathina James Brightful, who is Director of Community Education with Turnaround, Inc., and Visionary Director for Heal a Woman, Heal a Nation. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're going to continue for a few minutes here our conversation about 1 billion rising with 3 of the guests here from our first part of our program. Continuing with us is Jack Jones, who is sex educator, owner of Sugar, a lesbian-owned, women and trans-operated sex toy store here in Baltimore. Rebecca Nagel, along with Hannah Brancato, is a member of the Force Upsetting Rape Culture at upsettingrapeculture.com, who just today floated a giant palm on the reflecting pool at the National Mall that said, "I can't forget what happened and no one else remembers." We're also joined once again by Andrea Plaid, who is the associate editor at Racialicious, an award-winning blog about race and popular culture, where she blogs about race and sex in popular culture. Number here is 410-319-8888. I'd like to come back to a little bit about what we talked about. Bear with me, folks. My headphone jack just popped out. Ah, there it is, back again. Sorry about that. Pick up on something that kind of we talked about in a minute ago, and I think it came in interaction we had about 10 minutes ago. So, Andrea Plaid, when we talk about what to do from here, and I was kind of pushing the idea that I mean, when you look at sexual assault, there are women on women assaults, there are men on children assaults, but most sexual assaults are men on women and men on young women, most.
Yeah.
To me, it has to do with a huge change that's taking over the consciousness of the world in the last 60 years around women's consciousness and affecting not just male consciousness but a societal consciousness about who we are as a society. And that's just beginning. I mean, because for thousands of years, it was the opposite in most societies where men dominated everything and dominated the women within it. And that's what somehow we have to wrestle with and change, unless you think I'm missing something.
Well, I don't want to get into ideas of romanticizing matriarchies either.
No, I'm not doing that either. I'm not saying that either, right.
I'm saying that because I think far too often it's too easy to say, well, patriarchy is bad, so therefore matriarchy must be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way we like to say, well, because there's a woman in a public office, ergo it's going to be better for women as far as policy is concerned. Sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's not. I just want to add that nuance in there. I don't want to get into that idea of instantly, because women are there, ergo everything's going to be okay. That's not necessarily true.
No, I agree with that completely. I just think that there's something that fundamentally has to change, because the way media dominates this culture and the images, and also the whole question that you raise yourself about power, and it is about power. That dynamic has to change somehow.
Yes, I absolutely believe that. And there are many, many ways to do that, as we were saying earlier. But I also think that we need to the way that we've approached it at Racial Issues is we kind of look at not only race, but look at all the dynamics of how that plays out in popular culture, be it how the media covers people of color, how they cover white women when it comes, for example, to the quote-unquote we call the missing girl stories, whose stories are being told often versus whose stories are being told less often. Who is being seen as the perpetrator versus who is not seen as the perpetrator? For example, when we talk about the shooters, if we're talking about many of the shooters, they're seen as, oh, these are young men with mental illness. And if they're white, young white men, but if they are people of color, like the Dorner case, all of a sudden he's a savage, he's this, he's that. So, but yet we're still talking about the idea of violence. Both of all of these men have committed violence against innocent victims. But how are we also casting that idea as well? And so we're getting to those complications. Even when we're talking about concepts around women, and we talk about missing women's stories, we have young cisgender white women being covered. Whenever there's a young cisgender white woman who is missing, that woman is covered for days and days on end, but yet every year we have the Transgender Day of Remembrance, where there is comparatively speaking, virtually no coverage.
Right.
But yet there are hundreds of thousands of trans women, especially trans women of color, who go missing all the time, who are dead because they live in a society where, you know, nobody cares. So also we have to talk about who are we talking about when we encompass that idea of the 1 billion rising. Who are we saying, or who do we include in that concept of women and the 1 billion who are rising? We need to talk about that as well.
So, Jack Jones, before we have to go to our next segment about the people who are coming to D.C. in thousands to protest the pipeline. I'd like to hear your thoughts on what Andrew just said, Jack, and then hear Rebecca, and then we'll have to move on.
Well, I wish you could see head nodding on radio.
I can feel it.
Thank you for the head nod there. I appreciate that.
I would just like to say ditto. I mean, she's absolutely right. And I think that once we try to make things more equal, and once we try to eliminate racism and misogyny and transphobia, and try to create a world in which it's safe to be who you are, without who you are or who you appear to be being used as a way to hurt you, which I know it's a little Pollyanna maybe to think that we can get there, but I do believe we can, then that's a really good way to eliminate violence, right?
Right. I think we're only just beginning that. And Rebecca, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm right here. It's been so great to be part of this conversation. I'm in the car nodding my head enthusiastically at all of the brilliant insights that have been shared this hour. And I think two things need to happen. I think one is that we need to name the problem and keep naming it and give space where we're, and I appreciate what you're saying about what's talked about and what's recognized, because so much of the everydayness of rape is not talked about. So we have these myths of what rape looks like, but how common and how familiar and how much of a part of our communities and our cities and our families and our friend group it is we're not there yet as a society. And I think that that's a really big missing link. And then kind of just like what I said before, just as we need to name the problem, we also need to name the solution. And I think the solution is radical consent. And we need to talk about that. We need to show people what that looks like. And hopefully we can do both of these things simultaneously. So while we're taking down rape culture and dismantling it, we are building a wonderful day of a day without rape and a world where people interact with each other, not just in sex, but in all ways, with enthusiastic consent.
So let me just say we will not wait until next Valentine's Day to do this. We'll be doing this again very soon and picking up the radical consent and the rest. This is a very important subject, and I want people to think about this on this day and on every day. And Rebecca Nagle, you just heard, is upsettingrapeculture.com and also at morningenrage.com. Jack Jones, sex educator, owner of Sugar, here in Baltimore, in Hamden. And Andrea Platt, who's joining us once again, associate director of Racialicious, the award-winning blog about race and popular culture, where she blogs about race and sex and popular culture. And always a great guest to have on the show. And I want to thank my founder, James Brightful, who had to leave to run down to the flash mob taking place in downtown right now. Thank the four of you so much, and we will keep this conversation alive. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. We're going to take a very brief break and come back, and we are going to talk about the XL pipeline and the demonstrations taking place in D.C. today. Don't go away. We're coming right back.